This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. The plight of migrants traveling from war in Syria and political and economic oppression in North and West Africa is now a global crisis. The Obama administration has vowed to accept at least 10,000 displaced Syrian refugees, but immigration is a red meat issue among America's presidential candidates, from insults against Mexican nationals to the ethnicity of anchor babies. The topic stirs up both the liberal and conservative base. While most Americans may consider people fleeing mortal danger to be welcomed and treated differently than economic immigrants caught crossing the border, their fates may not be all that dissimilar. Asylum seekers can spend months, even years, inside of hundreds of detention centers spread across the United States. Tom Peters is a journalist. He's currently based in Turkey, and we found his article, "They Treat You Like an Inmate," at Politico.com. Hello, Tom.
Thank you so much for having me here.
I'm sure this is quite complicated, but if you can summarize what U.S. policy is on granting political asylum.
So asylum, it's similar in many places. You cannot plead asylum unless you are physically in the U.S., and that's also the case with Europe as well. That's why we see the Syrians and other folks going there by boat and all this stuff. But so you need to actually get yourself to a border crossing or into the country somehow. So in the U.S., that means you have two options. You could arrive on, say, a tourist visa, and once you get to the airport, you could ask for asylum. Generally speaking, if you're an asylum seeker, you're probably not going to have some sort of legal visa. You're going to probably arrive on a land border. And that doesn't mean that you're crossing illegally. You would just go to the port of entry, like the Bridge of the Americas that connects Ciudad Juarez and El Paso, Texas. And you would get to the customs point, and you would tell the officials that you're pleading asylum.
How do they establish this danger? Is it by country or case by case?
Well, it's case by case. So if you arrive, let's say that you're coming from Mexico, and you would say that you have credible fear. Let's say that you're being threatened by not only the drug cartel but the Mexican military and police. And so what they would do is they would put you into a temporary holding facility. And this is where it can kind of get into some gray area, because these holding facilities could be anything from a kind of like an open dorm. So you would either go to that, or you could be potentially taken to a local jail if that's over full. And now, on average, you would spend about 19 days in one of these facilities. And you would have an interview with DHS or CBP officials to establish what they call a credible fear. So they would do an interview with you, look at your identity, make sure that it's correct, and then try to make sure that your story is indeed accurate. And most U.S. officials will tell you they do. It's pretty easy for them to weed out fake claims from legitimate claims.
Tom, your article opens with a pretty dark story of two men in Mexico, blindfolded, expecting to die, but they manage to get out of it and make their way to the border. How commonly do stories of asylum seekers begin like this?
So these two men that I talked to in the story, Israel and Efrain Chavez, and they had been brought to the U.S. as children. They were caught in an ICE sweep in their mid to late 20s and taken back over into to Mexico. The vast majority of their family, whom they had close ties to, was still in the U.S. But they were living in this house in Juarez. One of their cousins down there got into trouble with the Mexican authorities, and they were taken out into the desert, and they watched as men who they believed were Mexican law enforcement officials beat their cousin to death. And they were told that if they told anyone about what had happened, that they should say that their cousin was abducted by aliens. And they made it very clear that if Israel and Efrain were to say otherwise, that they would face a similar fate. So once that happened to them, they just immediately got into their car and drove to the nearest border crossing. I would say the vast majority of asylum seeker stories you hear have usually a very horrific bent to them, experience with the drug cartels and drug violence and those sorts of things. And that's pretty common if you're going to talk about people from Mexico. But we also have people that come in over our land borders who travel from places like Somalia or, you know, anywhere in the world where there's instability. And if you're coming from a place like Somalia or any war-torn region, it would be rare for you to make that journey without having experienced some serious and usually very graphic and difficult experience. You know, you're not going to the expense and the danger and all of that is it's not going to be something you take on casually.
You mentioned these credible fear tests. Well, only 5% of those who pass the test receive asylum or other relief. So what happens to those who don't receive asylum?
Well, so this is where, you know, you get into some real real hardship stories. You know, so the gentleman that I opened this Politico story with, you know, they'd had this horrific experience of seeing their family member, you know, beaten to death in front of them. This was about 2 years ago that this happened. And one of them has managed to get out, but it's not because of, you know, credible fear or anything. He had a marriage to an American citizen, and that was what got him out. But it took 11 months. Now, the other one, Efrain Chavez, he is still in this holding facility, and he's had his bid for asylum was initially rejected. He has an attorney that he's working with, and now he's gone through the appeals process. But it's like any, you know, any legal proceeding. Once you get into appeals and these sorts of things, it can take quite a bit of time. But unlike your average legal proceeding, you know, you're held in a detention facility.
That's 2 years in a detention facility. Who's paying for that?
Well, the U.S. taxpayers are, to a tune of on average of $161 a day. And there's some facilities where the per person fee can go up to almost $300. So it's really quite costly, and you know, not just in terms of the financial expense, but what it does to the people who are pleading asylum. You know, if you have an attorney who's helping you with your asylum case, you are 4 to 6 times more likely to get asylum than someone who doesn't. And yet, only about 15% of asylum seekers have access to an attorney. You know, there's alternatives to detention. You know, you could put an ankle monitoring bracelet, like someone who is on probation might have. Or there's systems where people could do checks or phone calls. There's a number of alternatives. It costs anywhere from less than $1 to about $17 a day. And in pilot studies that the U.S. government has done, you know, the main objective here is to get these folks to show up to court hearings. To determine their immigration status, and in the cases where they've tried these alternative to detentions, they've been over 99% effective in getting people to show up to court. So, it's the current system that we have is costly, and it's questionable as to whether or not it really merits that cost.
We're talking about the thousands of migrants who are seeking asylum here in the United States. Tom Peter is with us. He wrote about both the cost and the conditions of facilities housing asylum seekers for Politico. How many people are we talking about held in these detention centers?
Well, now the one thing you have to make the distinction is with a lot of these figures, the asylum seekers are mixed into the detention facilities with other immigrants. So this could also be, you know, they'd be in there with someone who crossed the border illegally, uh-huh. who was an economic migrant. But of asylum seekers, we're talking about annually probably about 15,000.
Okay. And you mentioned that there are hundreds of these facilities throughout the U.S. Do we know that they're among us?
You know, I don't think most people do. You know, it's we spend about $2 billion a year detaining immigrants, and included in that is asylum seekers. And it's a massive cost. And there are these detention facilities that are out kind of in the middle of nowhere in most cases, in these small towns. And really, in a lot of these little towns, the detention facility is probably the main industry or the main driver of the economy.
Well, or immigrants. I mean, I can't imagine that somebody making their way to the United States, if they knew that this was the process to get legal asylum, you know, would they be persuaded to try and go illegally and do it otherwise?
Well, you know, certainly the benefit of doing it this way, where you would show up at a border and plead asylum legally, is that you know, if you come over illegally, it creates a host of other issues for you. So if for the folks that do try crossing legally, they have a better shot at potentially getting settled here. But I mean, we're still talking 5% of people that pass the test, and people don't really know what they're getting into. You know, another person I talked to for this story traveled from Somalia. And they went from all the way from Somalia to Brazil. And when she got to Brazil, the smugglers had told her that Brazil was like about a 20-minute drive from the U.S. border. Mm. And she, you know, she'd only heard of Brazil in reference to its soccer team. This was how ill-informed she was. And you know, she had to travel overland from Sao Paulo, Brazil, all the way up through South and Central America, through Ciudad Juarez, which is one of the most violent cities in Mexico, to make it to the land border. So it's, you know, and she had no idea when they drove her to the detention facility. You know, she thought that they were just taking her into America, and then suddenly she's, you know, going behind these chain link fences with razor wire on the top, and you know, it took her months and months to get her situation resolved.
Well, especially in light of what is going on, the migrant crisis now in Europe, you know, people from the Middle East, North Africa, and Central Africa. There are a lot of people in the U.S. who are advocating for taking on more asylum seekers, especially those fleeing Syria. What are the odds that this process would get straightened out in order to handle an influx of, you know, some people are saying as much as 20,000 Syrian refugees?
Well, if we took 20,000 Syrian refugees and they came through, you know, UNHCR, the United Nations High Commission on Refugees, they wouldn't end up in these detention facilities. I mean, just geography protects us from having to deal with the questions that Europe is facing right now. But if we were in Europe's position and Syrians could very easily reach our land borders, it's worth noting that we would not have some, you know, open arms policy or be putting them, you know, in nice facilities. They would be going into detention camps. It would be exactly what happened when we saw the flood of, you know, children immigrants in particular in the summer of 2014. You know, they get put in detention facilities. That's what happens to you if you show up at a land border in America asking for asylum.
Well, much has been made of private prisons possibly profiting off of the high incarceration rates in the U.S. You make the point that many of these immigration detention facilities are run by for-profit companies. What does that mean for ethical questions of retaining asylum seekers for as much as, you know, a couple of years at a cost of $2 billion a year?
Well, it's hard to draw, you know, a hard linkage between these two, but there's a lot of speculation that there is not an incentive to, you know, expedite the processing of a lot of these folks. You know, the private prison industry has a very strong lobby, and there's a lot of question about whether or not you know, their interest in the issue of immigration detention are influencing our policy.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for going through this with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tom Peter, he's a journalist who's currently based in Turkey. He wrote about the plight of asylum seekers in the U.S., and there's a link to read his article. It's called They Treat You Like an Inmate, and it appeared in Politico. Again, a link at wordofmouthradio.org.